Penguin Random House Audio presents Under the Feet of Jesus by Helena Maria Viramontes. Read for you by Nancy Ticotine.
One. Had they been heading for the barn all along? Estrella didn't know. The barn had burst through a clearing of trees, and the cratered roof reminded her of the full moon. They were seven altogether, their belongings weighed down an old Chevy Capri station wagon, the clouds above them ready to burst like cotton plants. Then the barn disappeared into a hillside of brittle bush and opuntia cactus as the man who was not her father maneuvered the wagon through a laborious curve. Sunlight weaved in and out of the clouds. Wisps of wind ruffled the orange and avocado and peach trees, which rolled and tumbled as far back as the etched horizon of the mountain range. A cluster of amputated trees marked the entrance of the side road. The mother said, "Aquí," and the man whom they called Perfecto slowed down and turned. The mother refolded the Phillips 66 map and shouted that she hoped the winds would push the clouds away and it wouldn't rain. She had to repeat it over the booming muffler to Perfecto, and he tested the windshield wipers. One wiper scraped away a splattered insect. He scratched his head and said he was tired of sleeping sitting up in the car. And then they were quiet. The silence and the barn and the clouds meant many things. It was always a question of work, and work depended on the harvest, the car running, their health, the conditions of the road, how long the money held out, and the weather, which meant they could depend on nothing. Estrella watched Perfecto's hand scratching the back of his head with uncertainty. His skin was like the bark of a juniper tree. The beige station wagon bumped along the unpaved road, bucking the bundles and the rolled tarpaulin and pipes tied with a web of ropes to the luggage rack. "Shh," hissed Alejo to his cousin. "Someone's coming." "Shit, I hate this." "Quiet." Alejo saw the wagon from the tall peach tree in the orchard. He had been picking peaches ripe from the direct sun and handed his selections between the rustle of branches to his cousin, Gumesindo, who clutched a flour sack and doubled as a lookout. They labored before sunset, right after work, when others would not see them. The cousins had argued with one another, first, about whose turn it was to climb up the trees, second, about a man named Plato. Gumesindo thought Plato was plate in gringo Spanish, and when Alejo told him otherwise, they laughed so hard they had to remind themselves of why they were in the peach orchard. Alejo, slender and the more agile of the two, tested the slouching branches for strength, then pulled himself up until the younger branches creaked. Peach fuzz tickled his face. He picked the brightest peaches until he heard a car engine puckering like marbles against the hood, and he hunched into the bushy canopy of the tree. Through the colander of leaves, Alejo watched the car door open, its engine idling, while wasps droned near the resinous fruit. Their hind legs dangled like golden threads. A wiry man emerged from the station wagon, his creased and baggy trousers hiked above his waist. There was a slick wax shine to the cap of baldness on the thin man's head. Someone from inside the car handed him a hat. He palmed his sparse silver hair, then jammed the hat on his head, and then he reached for a rope tied above the car and pulled so that the bundle looked like a belly over a tightened belt. His glasses caught reflections of the afternoon sun as he knotted the rope and he turned towards the peach orchard, right in the direction of Alejo, and the man's glasses glimmered like sparks. Alejo quickly crouched further into the foliage and a branch snapped above his head. He pushed down a few leafy twigs and followed the wagon's tire tread until the dust settled. Perfecto headed for the clearing and steered away from the potholes, but still the car dipped and bumped, and the empty water bottle on the dash and coffee cups and sun visors flapped down, and the maps spilled onto the mother's lap. "Be careful," she scolded, bracing her arm against the sun-cracked dashboard. He wedged the bottle between them. The twin girl startled awake.
"Are we there yet?"
Ricky asked the mother. He reached up and halted a white plastic rosary which hung from the rearview mirror. Estrella waited for the mother's answer. Perfecto lifted a finger from the steering wheel and pointed to a shabby wood frame bungalow. Blonde tufts of asparagus weeds grew along the front of the bungalow and in between the warped boards of the porch steps. "Is this it, Petra?" he asked. Petra crossed her arms. The bigger oak tree, which once branched an arc of shade to the roof, was cut so far down the stump was useless even as a seat. The cooking pit seemed farther from the porch. "Gracias a Dios," she answered, and Perfecto cranked the parking brake. The wagon puckered and fell silent. "We're here?" asked Estrella. "We're here," said the mother, Petra. "We're here," whispered Estrella to her sleeping brother Arnulfo. The door sprang open. Stray socks, balls of crushed wax paper, peanut shells, and a plastic doll tumbled from the car. The twin girl spilled out of the back seat first. Estrella emerged after her brothers, her legs uncurling and her bare toes flexing. She picked up the doll and felt kinks in her back. Ricky had already stepped on it. "You okay?" she asked the naked doll, and then she shook the doll's head. "No." "Sure you are," she said, and tossed it back on the seat. Estrella ran, her flowered dress billowing, strands of black hair escaping from her unraveling braid. The twins trailed like busy chicks. The boys headed for the vacant corrals. They jumped the wooden fence and ran, jostling the tall grass. Petra had deep coffee-colored skin and black kinked hair that she tamed with a short braid. She walked to the cooking pit in flapping rubber sandals, then arched her back. The grate needed scrubbing, and she looked around for horsetail weed, which was just as good for scouring as steel wool. With a stick left by the last occupants, she poked the coal and wood ash. The fragrance of toasted corn tortillas, of garlic and chile bubbling over the flames, of fried tripas spitting fat in a cast-iron skillet rose like dust to her nose. She lifted the grate and touched the sticky char. Petra turned when the porch planks moaned at the weight of Perfecto's boot popping a scorpion. "Niño de tierra," he said, looking around for any more. The wind lifted the large rim of his hat. Perfecto inspected the two-room bungalow, sliding his thick bifocals up to the bridge of his nose. He rattled the knob, stepped into a dingy room with a window facing the porch. The stink of despair shot through the musty sunlight, and he knocked a fist against the window to loosen the swollen pane to get some fresh air into the room. Cobwebs laced the corners. There were no beds and only a few crates used for chairs arranged around one table as if for a game of cards. Perfecto figured only men had stayed here. He planned to move the table outside near the cooking pit. Three crates in the corner would be a good place to set up Petra's altar with Jesucristo, La Virgen María y José. He walked slowly, studying the ceiling for leaks. In the center of the second room, Perfecto spotted a dead bird. Birds, the sparrows especially, found their way into abandoned houses only to bombard themselves against the walls. But dead birds spooked Petra, so he picked the carcass up by its stiff, taloned feet and dumped it out the side window. Perfecto Flores, who was 37 years older than Petra, would not mention the bird. Petra pulled the broom out of the station wagon. She watched Estrella's long legs leap over the tall blades of wild mustard grass, her own legs shackled by varicose veins. She called for Estrella and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?